Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, where we cover trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world, our communities, and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and with me today is Joshua Taylor and Nikki Taylor. Joshua Taylor starred collegiately at Pepperdine from 2012 to 2015, earning two ABC All-American honors and three All-MPSF accolades. He finished his career ranked ninth of all time in total kills of Pepperdine program history. Interspersed throughout his collegiate career, Joshua trained and competed with Team USA, competing in Canada, Italy, Argentina, Mexico, and in Brazil. Following college, Joshua played professionally overseas in Finland and Qatar. Currently, Joshua is the head coach of the University of Missouri women's volleyball team, a Division I program within the SEC Conference. Also with me today, too, is Nikki Taylor, who was a dual sport athlete playing her collegiate volleyball at the University of Hawaii, where she earned two AVCA All-American Volleyball Indoor Honors, as well as two AVCA All-American Beach Volleyball Honors. Nikki also trained and played with the U.S. national team and competed with Team USA in the Dominican Republic. Nikki's professional career has included playing in Italy, Finland, and she will be returning for her second season in Germany this coming fall. To those listening, if you haven't figured it out already, both Joshua and Nikki are my two oldest children. I am very proud of them both, and I am honored to have them with me on the podcast today. Nikki and Joshua, welcome.
Thanks. Pumped to be here.
Thanks for having us, Dad. We're really honored to be here with you.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys doing so, and I'm excited for our time together today. We're talking today about sports psychology and its application to life. And as we go into this, if you would, let me set the foundation for our time by saying I found in my years in psychology, being an athlete, working with a number of athletes, that an athlete's mind is unique. It's trained from the very beginning of their sports involvement, typically at a very young age, and involves almost an indoctrination process on how to think, on how to plan, how to respond and act, and ways to establish and build emotional control, with most of this being done without this internal mindset and this unique style and type of growth even being recognized by the athlete as is being developed. In fact, most athletes go through life starting first with sports and then later maybe in their relationships, maybe in parenting, if that's where life takes them, their professional careers outside of, or maybe even after sports, without even realizing that their foundation for doing life was cultivated and established from the very beginning by way of involvement in athletics. In other words, this way of being and thinking is the only way that they know how to be in and do life. Let me also say, as we set this up, that as we speak about sports psychology and the development of this very unique mindset, it's not something that one is simply born with. Now, when we talk about nature versus nurture, genetics do play a role in an athlete's success from a nature perspective. In other words, you're either born 6'8", like you, Joshua, or 6'4", like you, Nikki. That allows you an opportunity to perform at the higher levels. Or maybe you're born with an inherently strong and large body type or frame. Let's say like Thor, the guy who's the current reigning strongman, the guy from Iceland. But if we're looking at the nurture side of things now, those things can actually be taught. And it allows us to see that these psychological strategies, these techniques that come under an athletic mindset, can actually be learned. And that factors such as discipline, self-motivation, are a choice that we all have the ability to develop within ourselves. So what I want to talk about today, as I include you in the conversation now about sports psychology, is going to be specifically about the mindset that elite athletes naturally function from, specifically those factors in sports and in life that are factors that we can control. In other words, factors that we have choice over. What I want to do is talk about several topic areas. The first one I want to talk about is choices we have the ability to make and the idea of taking risks that can present us with failure. So let me set it up this way. Remember Michael Jordan, he said one time, I can accept failure. Everyone fails at some time, but I can't accept not trying. What are you guys' thoughts about failure and the risks that people in life have an opportunity to take and how athletes think about risk-taking and the choices to do so?
I think that being an athlete, you have a very different perception of failure, where it's almost become or morphed into somewhat of a necessity rather than something that you see as demoralizing or that makes you feel bad about yourself. I think you realize as an athlete that the only way you can grow to do something is by practicing and failing at it, so that way you can know how to change it. So I think it definitely has a very different perspective in the eyes of an athlete of failing.
Yeah, I agree. I think especially in collegiate athletics, prior to athletes becoming professional, you know, oftentimes when you're performing a new skill or fine-tuning a technique, you're going to see yourself get worse prior to yourself getting better. And identifying failure as something that's positive is something that really allows the athlete to improve mentally and physically pretty quickly.
It's interesting because I oftentimes think we're either winning or being successful or we're learning. And as players, you've had to decide that I'm going to take some risks here. And like you just said, Joshua, I'm likely to get worse before I get better. Or Nikki, what you're saying is psychologically, mentally, I have to recognize that I'm not going to measure my failure right now. I'm just going to measure trying to get better. So you're saying that challenges are really opportunities for growth, maybe even creativity, and ways maybe to expand your talent or repertoire or your skill set. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah. And I think too, like coming from the perspective of someone that plays in a team sport, it can be frustrating sometimes if I'm making a mistake and then my teammate is making a mistake and then my other teammate is making a mistake. Like it can kind of just catch up and the ball can kind of, you know, keep rolling with that. But I think that trying to reframe it from that frustration into, okay, hey, we're all just trying to work on something. We're all trying to get better at something. And this is going to be a byproduct of what we're trying to do is a good way to have that mentality about it.
I like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, when you talk about winning or learning, something we talk a lot about at Mizzou is you're either getting better or you're getting worse. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're putting out the best stats and you're improving on those stats every single game. You know, getting better is learning from maybe failures or some somewhat mediocre performances or even kind of interactions maybe you're even having with your teammates. How can I better support my teammates? How can I better receive support from my teammates? And if you're not getting better and finding ways to improve on what you've been doing, then you're getting worse, but your opponent is finding ways to get better. So they're going to beat you every time if you're not finding ways to improve a little bit each day.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, I have a question. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel like you changed going from an athlete and having to work through the failure yourself into being a coach and kind of encouraging but still demanding close to excellence from your players who are in that moment failing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think I was far harder on myself as an athlete than I am a coach. And, you know, as a coach, I'm never going to expect my girls to be perfect, but I do expect them to chase excellence. And we hold them to a pretty high standard here at Mizzou. And, you know, I think a big thing is really, really kind of requiring them to stay in the moment is what's going to create some great improvement. And I think one of the things we don't tolerate is our athletes hanging on to the past or, you know, looking too far ahead to the future here. And, you know, usually looking back creates some regret and looking forward creates too much anxiety. So I think the big thing, especially for improvement, is staying in those moments and really kind of holding themselves and us as a coaching staff, holding them to a high standard.
That's a good question, Nick. I like that one. When you're talking about just chasing excellence, I want to segue just a wee bit into why it's important to actually have practices. And we can practice things, again, not just in athletics, but these things we're talking about today are all transferable into life. These are not techniques, strategies, a skill set that's reserved just for athletes. In fact, this is what allows athletes to take it from good and make it better, make their better best, and really perform at that highest level possible. And it's something that we learn how to train. Same when we train our body, we get to train our mind, and these things are transferable. So talking about the importance of practice, you're talking about chasing excellence. Oftentimes I would say practice perfect. It wasn't looking for the absence of failure or mistakes. It was the attempts. It was actually what you're saying here, chasing excellence. So why is it important to practice?
I think being comfortable with failure is pretty important. And I think, you know, when you look at competition, that's about 10% of what an athlete does. And, you know, the other 90% no one sees because it's in the practice gym or it's in the weight room. And, you know, I think the big thing with practice as well is realizing that sport, and I think life as well, is a huge majority process focused versus outcome focused. And the outcome will happen if you're focused on the process and the moment. And I think you break down technical skills like receiving a serve in volleyball. If I'm focused on a couple key things to perform that skill well, then the outcome usually takes care of itself. And I think you can relate that to life as well. If I'm putting in the hours and I'm doing right things and, you know, I'm doing right by my coworkers and by my staff and doing the best of my ability, then the outcome will typically take care of itself. But life is just so process focused. And I think oftentimes when we see failure over and over, it's because we're too focused on the outcome rather than the little things that make that one big thing happen.
What I like about that piece, Nick, I want to ask you the same question here of, I know that outcome goals are not something that we can always control. I can't go out and score 20 points every night. I can't go out and, you know, hit 650 every night. I can't win that bid in business every time I put in a proposal. It just doesn't happen. However, what you're suggesting, if I'm chasing excellence and doing my very best and doing right things, being responsible for myself, you're talking about what I can control are the effort-based or the process-based parts of what I can be disciplined in. So the practice focus is really about building disciplines, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that I really tried to change my perspective a couple of years ago of what, you know, kind of quote unquote practice was supposed to be. And I did this because I read a book by the all fame John Wooden. And I really resonated with one of his quotes that said, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. And I thought, wow, that's such an interesting concept to think that everything that I do in a quote unquote practice is really just a preparation for that 10% that Josh was talking about where I'm in competition. Because that's, you know, when the lights come on and we're wearing the cool jerseys and the nice shoes and everybody's out and there's music and it's this whole kind of theatrical thing. But, you know, it really is only the 10%. And the other 90% of that, you know, preparation that I do is what I should be doing in practice. And I really resonated with how having that mentality of, okay, the only way that I can kind of prepare for what I'm doing is to try and do it. And if I fail, all right, I have another chance. I have another preparation moment where I can go ahead and try and do that. And I'm kind of good to go.
You both are talking about the disciplines. You know, it's fun to watch people in the Friday Night Lights, and that's why we play, that's why we practice, that's what we go watch, all those things. And that's the outcome of all this preparation. How it goes, it doesn't matter. But what I see really being key is that most people don't see the 90%. They don't see the ice baths. They don't see taking the Motrin. They don't see the aches and pains, the sprains and the strains and the breaks. They don't see the rehab and all those things. But all of those things put together, whether you have injuries or not, but the practices you put in, what I see are those are places where we build disciplines. For me, things like disciplines, like you guys are talking about, if I could just cherry pick some things you've said and maybe just could have put a frame around them. You're talking about athletes with this mindset have the ability to postpone gratification. They may not be successful the first 10, 20, 30 times on this new skill they're trying to learn. You know, the old, very well-known adage, Edison, you know, failed 1,000 times before he made the light bulb. 1,001, he made the light bulb. And he said all those prior times are just about learning, you know, what not to do and what to do. That's what we get to do as athletes. So the ability to postpone gratification in order to learn how to do right things. You're also talking about tolerating frustration being in a very essential part of a mindset. These are skills that we can learn, postponing gratification, tolerating frustration. You're also talking about developing emotional muscle here, how to manage those things that are really, really tough. And I'm also hearing you say how to prioritize, if you're working in a team sport versus more an individual sport, but a team sport, you're talking about prioritizing selflessness and being other-focused, almost being in a servant leader role if you can. Say just a wee bit about that.
Yeah, I think that it's hard because when you play a team sport, you know, you have these visions that you want to have individually for yourself. Okay, I want to perform really well in this match. I want to get so-and-so amount of kills and things like that. But really everything that I do, if I'm, you know, trying to get so-and-so amount of kills is what's going to help the team get better. And at the end of the day, that kind of has to be my main goal, my main focus. And I think building, like you said, that emotional muscle is really hard. You have to fail so many times until you can be comfortable to fail. It's not fun. And there's a lot of weight and heftiness behind what you are failing at, because I'm trying so hard to perform well and it's not happening. And all of my intention and all of my heart is pouring into that. And then I'm failing at it. And it really carries a lot of weight. This is my pride. This is my joy. This is my excitement. This is, you know, everything I'm working towards. And failing at that so often really does create this thick emotional muscle.
I really like that. So you're talking about it from an individual athlete's on a team side. Josh, as a coach, how do you give your team permission to take some risk, failure, to tolerate some of the frustration? How do you set the framework for that and have that holding capacity as they struggle with purpose, as they chase that excellence?
I think the only thing that gets punished in our gym is lack of effort. And I'm never going to punish one of my players for doing everything right and then making a huge mistake after doing the best they could. I could care less if they make a million mistakes after doing everything right leading up to it. When there's a lack of effort and, you know, they're not giving their all to the team, that's when we're going to have an issue. But I think when it comes to the servant leading stuff that you're talking about, being a part of, and this is something I wish I would have realized a little bit sooner as an athlete, but as a coach, you realize that there's so many people, players, staff, that have come before you that have made your organization so great that you want to do right by them. It's being a part of something that's so much greater than yourself that really gives you some humility and allows you to really go to work for others around you. And, you know, there's a lot that can be accomplished when you don't care who gets the credit.
That's really good. So we're talking about motivation or kind of self-discipline. I've heard you talk about intrinsic versus extrinsic. Even when you were recruiting the other day with a young woman, you're talking about what drives people, and you're talking about, is it intrinsic or is it extrinsic? Are you doing it from within? But you're talking here about even having a legacy of a program, something larger than yourself, and being honored and kind of humbled by that. I'm going to work hard to honor them and respect them that have come before me. I really like that.
Absolutely. And I think back to when I was at Pepperdine, my head coach, Marv Dunphy, he has Olympic medals, multiple NCAA national championships. He's in multiple Hall of Fames. And one day after practice, I was kind of being a turd. And he came up to me and he said, "Josher, what if everyone on this team was just like you?" And it was one of those things that was really hard for me to swallow, because in my mind, I said to myself, wow, we'd get nowhere. This practice would have sucked. We would not be prepared for our match this weekend. And, you know, that's a heavy weight. And you think about that, especially as a head coach. Would I want everyone in this program to be just like me? And of course I don't, but you got to look at yourself a little bit in the mirror and say, am I doing everything in my ability to help everyone around me be successful? And that was one of those interactions I've had with a coach that I'll definitely never forget.
I think it's important to set goals, have visions. I don't believe that we can really motivate each other. I don't think we can do that. I think motivation comes from within. That's my choice. You can cast a vision for me, and you can hold something up to me as to maybe what could be if I wanted to choose to commit to it, tolerate frustration, all those things we talked about earlier, be disciplined in myself. Those are choices. So I think expectations are really the cornerstone of the start of every endeavor. And I know when you guys go into your season, both as players and as coaching, you're setting for yourself and for those around you things that we're going to strive for. And I remember talking with your coach one time, Josh, Marv Dunphy, guy who's been there and done all that. He's the John Wooden of volleyball, clearly. I asked him one time, what sets the elite athletes apart from the really, really, really good athletes? And he said, the elite athletes do nothing that would deter them from or risk them not attaining their goals. Nothing would deter them from that. Everything they do, once they set a goal, lines up with that goal being attained. That's a pretty sobering thing. That's a choice. We get to do that. But in setting expectations, the outcome versus effort-based, everybody wants to say, well, you want to go give 150% or 110%. You ain't got 150%. You haven't got 110%. You got 100%, and that's it. But sometimes, maybe because I got out of bed the wrong way, or maybe I had a bad day at work, or maybe, you know, I didn't do well on a test, or I didn't get good feedback on something, maybe I can't give 100%. Every day, even if I want to. Josh, what are your thoughts about what do I do then?
It's a tough one. And I think, you know, you see it, especially at the collegiate level. These kids are going through some pre-developmental years of their life. They're learning who they are, and they're trying to navigate things and find themselves a little bit. So you run into a lot of emotional things, which is totally okay. You want sport to allow them to fail, because sport is much nicer than real life. And if you can teach things in sport, it's pretty awesome. But kind of what you're talking about here, there's often times where our girls will come in and they do not have 100% in the tank. You know, I even remember when I was in college and I was exhausted one day, and Marv said, how much do you have today? And I said, you know, coach, maybe like 60-70%. And he said, well, I better get 100% of that 60-70% today. And because, again, it's not expecting perfection, but it's expecting you to give everything you've got. And because you're right. And I think that is what sets elite athletes apart. You know, I think also elite athletes realize that everything they do either helps or hurts the team. And identifying that you don't have everything in the tank is okay, but not giving everything that you do have in the tank isn't.
Yeah, I think that it's really important to just be honest about how you're feeling in that moment. For example, when I had a pretty rocky college career in regards to injuries, I mentally could give my 100%. I was there. I was zoned in. I was ready to go. But I was sitting on the sidelines the entire practice, watching, doing nothing.
Right.
And I physically could not give my 100%. It's so hard to kind of just sit in that moment and just kind of hold it there and say, you know, I can't give my 100% in this way, but hey, maybe I can give 50%. I can get up. I can go and shag bowls. When my teammates go and get water, I can come in the huddle and give them high fives. You know, I can stand there. I can be with my team. And it goes back to that feeling of, okay, you know, I'm sorry, but I just don't have that 100% in my tank right now. I really don't. But I have X amount, and I will give you 100% of that X amount. And that's going to be all I can provide for right now.
What I like about both you're saying in that is, again, that's my choice. And that's something that I can choose to live in my life no matter what I'm doing. And I think the way that we do anything is the way that we'll do everything. And even if I haven't got it fully in my tank, I can still choose to do the small things that can accumulate over time and really contribute. And if I can't pick myself up, I get to pick others up.
I think that that really applies as well, because if you're thinking about it, like Josh said, right, I can't give my 100%, but I can give 80. That's not just on the court. That is in the locker room. That's with my teammates, checking up on them, making sure they're okay. That's me studying after I've had 5 classes in a day and had a 2 to 3 hour practice, and then still studying for 2 hours in the evening. That's me eating healthy, me stretching or icing. It's not really just in the practice. It's in every aspect of what I'm doing as a human being.
I'm going to push the envelope a little bit here and maybe even ask kind of a couple of controversial questions just to stir it up, if you allow me. Let me make a statement. It's the challenge about taking risks and how folks oftentimes will create excuses versus accepting a reality. And maybe for some, you know, I can, just from a psychologist's point of view, I can go back and I can cite a number of reasons why people would struggle with reality. Maybe there's shame, maybe there's guilt, maybe there's a historic component in their family of origin where losing face, that kind of thing, was very, very risky. But let me ask you, do you believe that people really give their best that they can in the things that they do?
I think people rarely do the best they can. And I think the reason being is because giving your best every single time means that you've immersed yourself in the pursuit of excellence. And excellence is something that's rarely attained because it's very difficult, right? And I think another reason is because people rarely do the best they can. And along with that comes a really high level of risk. And because if I'm given the best I can and I don't succeed, well, then maybe I'm not enough.
Right.
You know, maybe I should just quit, or maybe I'm just not cut out for this. I don't know. But, and that ends it right there. And I think what we talked about, kind of repetition and how often your repetition results in failure prior to seeing success, is something that really deters people from continuing to do the best of their ability. And I think that's why we don't see as many people succeeding as we possibly could.
Yeah, I would like to ping off what Josh said and maybe add in a different perspective to that. I think that that is 100% true. I think that there might also be another way to look at it, in the sense that if I, let's say, give it my all, that's now what someone is going to expect of me every single time I'm there. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm setting this framework of I'm going to hit and attack the ball with 100% of my power, with all that I can possibly give. And, you know, now that's the expectation that I've put on myself, is that with every single touch I have, it's going to be my 100%. And it's kind of this framework that I set for myself, or this expectation that others now have of me.
That's
true. I think sometimes that can frighten people, maybe because they are afraid of failing at that.
I think both those points are actually really complementary. You're talking about how, you know, just using a kind of a cliche-ish term, playing in the zone. Basically, players, when they're playing in the zone, are not thinking all that much. They've done right things. We're talking about confidence. Confidence has to be earned. You just can't compliment a player or say, hey, you're a really good worker, and for them to have confidence, they got to earn that. And the way that, if we were to reverse engineer that, goes back to the practicings we talked about earlier. If you want to earn confidence, you have to do right things repeatedly. And over time, doing right things repeatedly and risking all that comes with it, you develop competence, you develop mastery, and over time you develop confidence. It allows you to walk into the gym and just know that we're going to be successful, or walk into the meeting or the interview or the presentation, whatever it may be. You practice that in such a way that that becomes a part of who you are and the level at which you play at all the time. But it's risky, because what if along the way my value, like you're saying, Josh, gets attached to me having to do that, and my worth, my value? Or what if I'm not, what if on the flip side of that coin is maybe I'm not enough if I don't perform at that level? And so now it's scary for me to give my best every time. Or Nikki, you're talking about how to do so. What if I can't perform? And what if people say, well, that imposter syndrome, well, that was good once, but that was just a fluke. That's not really who they are. And now you've lost face a second time. So I can see what you're saying is that people are afraid to give their very best, because what if some of these narratives become a self-fulfilling prophecy for them and they end prematurely? Am I getting that right?
Yeah. And I think too, when you make a mistake in your everyday life, it can kind of just be easily swept under the rug. But when you're an athlete, it's for everyone to see. That can also add to what Josh was saying of that fear of, man, I'm not enough, because everybody can see it now.
Yeah, there's no critics like the ones that are sitting in the stands or behind the boardroom table. It's the ones who go out there and put themselves out there that are the winners every time in good ways. Yeah. You know, one of the things I see being such an important thing in our lives is for us to know ourselves. And that sounds a little cliche-ish, but if we don't know ourselves, what are we doing? What are we pursuing? And part of the work that I do, helping people identify what their gifts and their talents and their abilities and their skills are that they've been uniquely gifted with, to then build their life around those things. I believe that these talents, gifts, skills, and abilities bring us fulfillment personally when we understand what they are and we really pursue them with some fervor. And those around us get blessed. And I think there's a really nice win-win to that process. But knowing ourselves is pretty key if we're going to be making a difference. Talk about how you went about understanding some of your gifts, besides just some of, you know, your height and some of the athletic abilities, but just qualities within, and also how you find helping others around you that you play with or work with, find some of what their talents and abilities are so they find unique ways to contribute based on those gifts and abilities.
I think identifying your gifts and talents and abilities can be difficult at times, because you got to be pretty self-aware. And it took me a while to be self-aware enough to kind of learn enough about myself to start becoming elite. And once you identify those gifts, you got to put yourself in situations where you can be successful and identify maybe where you have some deficiencies and seek not necessarily help in those areas, but you know, that's when you allow someone to come beside you and say, hey, I need some help with this. Let's find a way to be successful together. You're not going to find two people who are the same. And I think that's what makes things incredibly unique in the sport world as well as real life. And, Yeah, but I think it takes an extreme level of self-awareness to identify those unique skills.
Like Josh said, no two people are the same. Mm-hmm. People are going to think different thoughts, feel different things, believe different things. And one way when you are kind of working in a group setting, you know, whether that's in an office or as an athlete or things of that nature, is just if you can try to be true to yourself, which like Josh said, is it's hard sometimes. For example, when I was in Germany this last season, I've always been fairly good at really wearing my heart on my sleeve. I'm just kind of an open book with my emotions. And part of that is I'm a very touchy person. You know, I love giving high fives. I love putting my hand on my teammate's shoulder. And when I was in Germany, one of my teammates didn't really like being touched. And I, of course, didn't know that because she had never told me. So I would go up and give her high fives, put my hand on her shoulder. And, you know, one day she just kind of turned to me and she was like, you know, I don't like that. And I was like, all right, you know yourself. That's great. I know myself. I won't do that anymore, I promise. And it really encouraged us to help each other and build each other up. And the only way we were able to do that is by knowing ourselves, but also by being ourselves.
I think that comes down to how we get to respect and not just know ourselves, but ask those around us whom we work with and encourage them to be honest about who are they and what do they bring to the team. And where their place for contribution really lies. Not everybody can be the LeBron James and Michael Jordans. Not everybody can be, you know, the Tony Robbins, but all those people have supporting casts around them that allow them to be who they are, and the supporting casts around them allow them to be who they are. And I think as you guys are talking, I'm finding myself thinking is that if I can really know myself, my only competition is me. I'm not worrying about having to be better than you. I'm having to try and be the best me. I think, again, that's going to be that chasing that excellence or practicing perfect. It's those disciplines that I choose to be. Am I filling myself out with the best I can possibly be? If I'm setting goals with myself, it's not so much about going out and having to beat you. Now, there's a place where if I want to start over you, there's a competition in that way. But the way that I get to that competition is I start with a competition within first, with me. Am I doing every single thing that I can do that gives me the best opportunity when that chance presents itself? So at the end of the day, you know, we're all trying to better ourselves. And if the competition is within ourselves, what's it like when I'm going out and doing a workout? What am I setting as my goal for that day? What comes to mind?
For me, I think the biggest thing was being driven by discipline rather than motivation. And I think that was something really important for me to understand, was that motivation hits, you know, peaks and valleys, whereas discipline is something you choose to have. And it kind of takes us back to the beginning of where we were talking about, you know, making those right choices. And I agree with you. When you're disciplined, you're doing the right things and you're focused on the right things. And I think when you get too focused on the outside world or other people or what they're doing or comparing yourself to another athlete, you lose focus on what you need to be doing in that moment. And it's non-disciplined thinking. And when, like you talked about, you know, you're competing with yourself and you're finding ways to make yourself better. I found that being driven from a point of discipline rather than motivation is what allowed me to get there.
So that discipline motivation piece, I may not feel it, but it's still going to be right for me to be doing it. That's a discipline. You and I were walking into the gym the other night to go for a lift. And we were talking about how sometimes you may not feel like working out that day. The task is just to get to the parking lot. And chances are, if you just get to the parking lot and just get up and get there, you're going to walk into the gym. And there's never one time you walk out of a workout saying, man, I wish I hadn't done that.
Right.
But that's the discipline, not how I'm feeling about it. Because if I wait how I feel about it, it's almost like a train. You know, the engine is doing right things. That's the discipline. And the caboose is the feelings or waiting for the motivation. And the caboose never drives the train.
Right.
It always follows doing right things. And sometimes that motivation, that caboose is like 3 miles back. I'm not feeling it for a while, but in time, if I'm doing right things, the feelings kind of catch up and I get to feel good and driven and disciplined at the same time. I like that. Nick, you got a thought on that?
When you're in this competition zone, you know, you're fighting for a position and that's you as a player.
Yeah.
And then you also have this fight, like Josh was talking about, you know, with yourself.
Yeah.
You're trying to stay disciplined. You're trying to do good things. You're trying to do right things. And that's kind of this constant battle of holding yourself accountable. And I think being able to differentiate between your discipline, what you need to do as an athlete in your profession, this is my job, and what you need to do for yourself, which goes back to what we were talking about, you know, about knowing yourself and being yourself.
Really being aware of those and conscious of those.
Exactly.
It's really good.
Nikki and Josh, I really appreciate you joining me today. You know, an athlete's mind and their thinking processes are certainly unique. But the ways of training oneself to think really are available to anyone. Anyone can employ these, such that they too can process how to think and how to plan and emotionally respond and purposefully act to the things in their lives. And this mindset can be learned and applied by everyone to further the success in their lives as well. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This is great.
Thank you so much.
And for those of you listening, thanks for being part of our podcast. And we look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Triad Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.